So here's a question. Why does nearly every sweet recipe involve vanilla? Why not coriander or wattle seed? What about a passion berry? I think it's fair to say that we are a tad unadventurous here, we Western cooks, when it comes to spice, particularly in the noble art of baking. One woman who is keen that we should expand our horizons is award-winning food writer Eleanor Ford. She's author of four books, she's a spice expert, and her latest book is A Whisper of Cardamom, Sweetly Spiced Recipes to Fall in Love With. Eleanor, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We share a fondness for cardamom. I have to tell you that we have planted some in our backyard here in inner city Melbourne. It is, of course, too cold for the poor thing to bear fruit, but the scent of the leaves themselves, what a treasure of a plant cardamom is.
Oh, gosh, how lovely that you've got the plant even growing. It is the most amazing fragrance and so complex and interesting.
Yes.
But then all spices are, and I think that's what makes them so wonderful, is by their very nature, they're the parts of the plant that are the most dense in flavour and have these amazing aroma profiles going on.
Now, this is not your first rodeo in the world of spices. Why spices? What is it about spice that you find particularly compelling?
Well, I think that it's twofold. On the one hand, there's the most amazing stories to tell about spices. So as a food writer, they give you great pleasure because they're so multifaceted. And then they're exactly the same in the kitchen as well. They are such interesting ingredients with clever properties behind them that you can use to sort of lift and tweak your dishes and bring a whole new level of flavour and interest.
Well, one of your previous books, The Nutmeg Trail, and this one, A Whisper of Cardamom, there's the suggestion there, of course, that we tell so much in the story of these things that it touches on so much of human history.
Of human history, certainly. We have been bound up with spices for always, for millennia. We have been trading them across the world, and they have woven into our history and become tied up with things like the mapping of the world, the discovery, even into wars and colonialization, are all tied up with how powerfully lusted after spices were in our human history.
Where do we find cardamom originally?
It's from India. So therefore, there's kind of pockets of interest with cardamom as to where it's really taken hold. And in its native South Asia, it's an incredibly popular spice. And then it's moved into the Middle East, where again, it holds a significant role. And then travelled further. It's a real favourite of the old Viking countries. So it's interesting to me, and you can see this with all the different spices, sort of different regionalities, and how they've picked up and used the flavour profiles. Or there are some that have become so ubiquitous, like cinnamon, popular almost everywhere, also an Indian spice.
Did cardamom have that cachet? I mean, we know, you know, some spices were as gold. Is cardamom in that league?
Absolutely. I think it was. It was certainly viewed as a fine spice. I think nutmeg was perhaps the one that saw the greatest inflation as it travelled. But then so did peppercorns, until the trading monopoly managed to influx the market with them so strongly that became the spice that's on every table.
The humble
peppercorn.
So we've
got, you know, the humble peppercorn is the one we add to every savoury dish. Vanilla, the spice for every sweet dish. Why has it become so? And actually, we can twist things up a little and use other spices in the same way.
I'm intrigued. You mentioned Vikings and cardamom. What do they do with it?
Well, Vikings used cardamom's their absolute favourite spice. There was a festival of cardamom to celebrate how wonderful it is. And it's used so much. Think of those swirled cinnamon buns, often a cardamom bun, when one moves to Scandinavia. So delicious flavours.
When I think Vikings, I think, yes, swirly cinnamon buns. Central to this story is that that timeless relationship, sugar and spice, and of course, all things nice. Tell us about that, because those two ideas are so interlinked.
Well, I think sugar and spice are both ingredients that became very special in human history. They were rare, they were sought after, and therefore they became very, very expensive, a way to show status and wealth and demonstrate that you could afford to make something very special. So both sugar and spice, well, sugar actually was classified as a spice itself. For a certain period of history, which really means an item of special value. And they were used as gifts. They were used as love tokens, put into love potions as well. They got status as aphrodisiacs, as displays of stature. They really were this very special ingredient.
Can you tell us something broadly about, and you glance on this subject area, the relationship between cardamom and love?
Well, I think it can be all spices and love, really, but cardamom seems a particularly romantic one. And the greatest love story of all time was started by the smoking aroma of burning cardamom pods, which lured Mark Antony to Cleopatra's palace.
You have a timeline of human history through the book, and the Mark Antony and Cleopatra is just one of the love stories that you mention. Queen of Sheba? I dare say she was a spicy woman. What's her cardamom story?
I think the Queen of Sheba, when she visited King Solomon, she brought gifts of gold and jewels and spices. And that's really indicative of how important spices were. They would fit neatly into a gift, gold and jewels. They had the same value, the same symbolism, really.
Frankincense and myrrh, that kind of stuff. The Kama Sutra promotes the use of warming spices.
Yes. Again, they listed saffron, cardamom, ginger, many different warming spices, and also sugared milk. So again, sugar turning up as something sensual and aphrodisiac.
Yes, sugar's come a long way, hasn't it? The sort of ubiquitous social poison that it is now for a thing of such scarcity and value. It's quite a shift.
It's quite a shift. I think there's been undulations through history of different ways of viewing these ingredients and ways of interacting with them.
Yotam Ottolenghi, he describes you as the spice detective. and that's, I mean, that is something in this territory, isn't it? The stories of these things are labyrinthine. And that's, yes, telling the story of a spice like cardamom, it is indeed like detective work, piecing together the evidence.
It is. It's really fun to be able to take snippets of information from different places and work out how you can link them, see how these spices have gone on journeys. Because spices come from countries all over the world. You know, there is no one origin. There might be places in the tropics now where many spices were grown, but that wasn't the origin story. So really, like any good character, you can trace them along their journey and where they've been.
And there must be spices too that are lost to us, that are gone into the mists of time.
Well, that's true. There are certainly some that have had huge periods of popularity, maybe grains of paradise as an example, which in medieval times was rather a popular spice internationally and now a bit of a curiosity.
What is
it? And if we go back further, grains of paradise is a peppery spice. You can still get it today. It's got an interesting flavour profile of both hot but a little bit floral, a little bit fruity. It's a fun one to play with. Mm. And I've actually written a recipe for a salted black pepper shortbread, but with the option of adding in grains of paradise as well for a way of getting a different flavour profile. But if we really want to look for a spice that's being lost, we can go back further to the Roman times. And there was a spice that was an absolute favourite flavour and mentioned in so many recipes called silphium. But we'll never get to taste it and never really know what it's like because they ate it to extinction.
How intriguing. It must have been good.
Must have been very good.
Can we talk about cooking with spices? And I mean, are there rules of thumb? Do they fall into different categories of use? I mean, how do we set about navigating this terrain?
Well, there are so many different tips and tricks that you can use to bring out the best of your spicing, and it does rather depend on the recipe. But there's toasting to enhance flavors and to bring to the fore sort of nutty, toasty flavor profiles. Sometimes you might want to use a fat to help infuse the flavor, because fat's a good carrier. A lot of those phytochemicals that are in the spices and holding tight to their flavor will release it more easily into fat or alcohol than it would into any other liquid. Then there's infusing. Perhaps you want a recipe where you don't want your texture changed by a spice, so therefore you can use something to infuse the flavor and carry it over with a smoothness. So yes, there's lots of different ways that you can bring out the very best of your spices.
And lots of ways of using spices, not just for sort of flavor enhancement. I mean, there are other properties in both culturally and in culinary use. I'm thinking perhaps in fermentation, for example, of yeasted doughs.
Yes. So there's caraway seeds have been shown to improve fermentation in yeasts. So there are some clever little tips and tricks. These are very special and magical ingredients.
Cloves, of course, they're sort of the famous anaesthetizing effect.
Clove oil on teeth, that reminds me of my childhood. Yes. In fact, quite a few spices have got that mouth-numbing thing going on. We think of Sichuan peppercorns, certainly do that to the extreme. But if you chew on a neat spice, even take a little fragment of cinnamon bark and chew on it, you'll begin to feel that mouth-numbing effect that they've got, and certainly a clove has that.
We're familiar with that Viking favourite, as discussed, the cinnamon bun. But baking and spices, it's a tricky combination, in particular in the Western kitchen. Is there a reluctance about use of spice in baking, do you think?
Well, I wonder if it's just, maybe it's cruel to call it being unimaginative, but perhaps a little nervous about how those flavours could work and where and how to use spices. And I know that with baking in particular, we are taught that this is a science. You mustn't mess around with recipes. And that's certainly true. There are ratios you have to get right. But spicing is where you get to have fun. It's where you get to be a little bit more inventive, because you can take one recipe in a different direction by changing out the spicing. And so when I wrote this book, every recipe has got at least two different ways that you can twist the spicing and give you a very different flavor profile to your finished bake, depending on your own personal preference and whether you like something that's floral and sweet and romantic, or whether you like something that's fiery, or whether you like something that's sort of sweet and warming. You know, it's where that we get to be adventurous in our baking.
Well, and there's no harm, is there, in having a go, in seeing, well, I wonder what that would do. I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
Absolutely. It's something that you can play with. It's not going to mess up the recipe. And just to guide you a little, I've made lots of flavour wheels which show which spices pair with each other and other ingredients. There are no hard and fast rules, but it perhaps is helpful to think of spices within a family of flavours and where it might work or how they might blend together.
And that's a tremendously useful tool for helping people expand their vocabulary, but use basic skill and then branch off into complementarities, and you know that may well work with that. But one of the exceptions to this sort of spicy hesitation in baking is, of course, vanilla. And that you have a chapter on vanilla, and your suggestion is that we simultaneously under and overuse it. Can you explain that for us?
Yeah, I found myself arguing against my own self. At first, I was saying, let's not put it in everything. We're always putting in a little dash of vanilla extract. I see it in recipes time and time again. And that just makes it a little bit boring. We begin to think of it. Vanilla has become a byword for bland. And that's how it's become to be seen. But actually, if you taste the vanilla pod, it's the most miraculously complex ingredient with so many flavors going on. So my suggestion is you either use vanilla boldly with purpose when you really want vanilla, or if you're just adding a splash, give another spice a chance to shine instead, or just enjoy the toastiness of flour and the butter without getting vanilla, the ubiquitous spice that it can be.
I wonder too whether there are combinations that suddenly bring out a new accent from a very familiar taste. That there are things that we might, not necessarily with vanilla, but combinations that might just show each element of that combination in a slightly different light.
Oh, absolutely. I think that you can use, well, cinnamon's a good example in that it's a spice that itself doesn't really taste sweet, but is a real sweetener and brings out the sweetness of whatever you put it on. So try dusting a little cinnamon over a chocolate brownie. And it's transformative, not when you stir it in, but just a layer on the top. And suddenly it'll give a different dimension as you eat it. Or quite a famous one, black pepper on strawberries. And it's an unusual trick, but it's the warmth of the black pepper just sort of balances that sweet tartness of the strawberries and somehow makes them taste more of themselves.
They're great fun. Essential in this story around spice is this sense of fragrance and the relationship between fragrance and taste. That's complex territory when it comes to cooking.
It is. And I think that we're aware that we've got taste happening in two different places. There's the tongue where we sense sweet, sour, salty, bitter, you know, and then there's the nose. And a good way to, a little experiment you can do at home to demonstrate this to yourself is to break off a square of dark chocolate and put it on your tongue with your nose pinched shut and taste the journey that you go on for a moment as it melts. You can taste the sweetness, perhaps a little bitterness. And then release the pinch on your nose and suddenly you'll have a huge wash of fragrance come over you. And those are all those, you know, more interesting flavor notes that are going on in a complex ingredient like chocolate. And I think it's a good show of exactly what spices are doing because yet again, they're such a complex ingredient. We're really relying on fragrance and the nose is just much more clever than the mouth. It really picks up. In a lot more nuanced way.
Oh, look, that's an exciting challenge. And I can just see listeners all around Australia reaching for a square of dark chocolate as we speak and pinching their nose tight. Thank you for bringing that to our lives and to this fascination with spice.
Let me know how it goes. See if you think it's a good experiment.
Eleanor Ford, award-winning food writer, spice aficionado, author of A Whisper of Cardamom. Sweetly spiced recipes to fall in love with.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.